Hello, everybody. This, for the time being, is Jughead. And thank you once again for indulging in my interview style on this podcast, Jughead's Basement. It is really great that you listen to this show, and I would like you to take it to the next level and help out if you can. And you can do that by sharing the podcast with people you know or people you don't know. They might look at you strangely, but then later when they're at home, you know, right before dinner or right after, you know, eating a little nighttime snack, they might go, "Hey, I might just check out that Jughead's Basement podcast." Even if that person that told me it is a little bit crazy. Or you can just share it with your dog or friends or just share it with yourself. You can also do a one-time donation to Jughead's Basement at PayPal. You just put in the little space there, put in jugheadsbasement@gmail.com. Or you can go to the website, www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com. And on the right side, you'll see a link for donating at PayPal. And that'll take you to all the needed places you need to go. Or you can press that wider, bigger button called Patreon, and you can become a patron at the $2, $5, and $10 tiers, where you help out monthly by donating to the show. You can also pay that in advance 1 year, and that really helps me out, and it gets it off your mind, and then, you know, you don't have to worry about those monthly payments, no matter how big or meager. With these donations, you get access on the Patreon site to unedited videos of the interviews that I have done. And to the varying tiers, you get varying degrees and amounts of these videos. You also get, on all the tiers, access to my writings for a book that I plan on publishing eventually on Rare Bird Lit called We Screeched. It will have copious amounts of photos and short stories about all the bands that I've played in. You can also ask me questions on the site, and I occasionally do videos where I answer questions and just talk about what's going on at Jughead's Basement and in my life and in the music scene. This was fun to reconnect with Lucy from Dog Party and Doki Doki. I heard a new song from Doki Doki as spoken about by Mike Park on the social medias, and I immediately took to it, already being a fan of Lucy from Dog Party. So I hope you enjoy this discussion. Listening to Operator by Dog Party off their 2018 record Hit and Run. Hello everybody and welcome to Jughead's Basement, episode 174 of Lo-Fi Interviews with Hi-Fi Guests. This week with Lucy Giles of Doki Doki and Dog Party. Lucy talks to us about the link between punk rock and country music. Dog Party is working on a new record. Lucy's first public show in fourth grade, opening for Agent Orange, transition into intentional writing, Gwen loves spreadsheets, recording with Doki Doki and Mike Park's involvement, Lucy's current career as a DJ, Jughead and Lucy bond over freeform dancing, plus much, much Doki Doki Dog Party country hoedown, more, more, more! Hello.
Hi.
Hello to you. We are already recording. That's the way I do it. It's from the stop, from the start.
Awesome. Off with the races.
Yeah. Where are you now, Lucy? Are you still in Sacramento? Or I can't remember where you
I am.
I guess I'll just start questions off the bat. I'm curious as to will be I'd like to dig in more of all of your stuff, Lucy, since this is more of a long form one. But
cool.
I was excited by the new band that Mike Park's been talking about a lot online. So that's how I heard about it. Doki Doki. Is everyone in different areas? Is it? They're all California based, right? Is that true?
Yeah, pretty much everyone is in the Bay Area except for me.
I know you just also just got off the tour with Dog Party, so that's not done. That's just this is just other projects you're working on, right?
Mm-hmm.
You and your
yes.
sister are, will always be sisters, I imagine. So
very true. Yeah, my sister and I are pretty much almost done with a new record, so we have big plans moving forward.
Yeah, what are the big plans?
Oh, just releasing the record and more touring throughout the year and festivals and exciting stuff.
Yeah, well, let me find this thing because this is the song I used last time. Today I started loving you again.
Oh, yeah.
Today I started loving you again. I'm right back.
Are you playing with that some of that style on this new Dog Party, or that was just a
nope.
just a little veering off to the side for a little while?
Exactly. Yep.
Well, what yeah. that's for the audience who doesn't know. I mean, I'll probably play a little bit on here, and it was also in the Dog Party episode. But it has a little bit more of a country tween to it. That
yeah.
song, and I think when we talked to you last, you were inundated with yourself with a lot of that those influences. Do you think that little movement into that affected your writing after?
Not necessarily. I mean, concept-wise, I feel like country music and punk rock are very hand-in-hand if you're talking about old-school country music. So if only, or I think that maybe it strengthened it in the case of the punk ethos, I'd say.
Yeah, because I think the thing one of the things they have in common is and people often criticize this, but the simplicity of the chords, mm-hmm. which technically is not easy to write poppy good melodic stuff. As we know, as writers, we know it takes time to learn how to do it. And everyone, you know, every song isn't a poppy hit that people will sing along to. So there's some work involved. But it seems like both those strands of music have that in common, like that trying
yeah,
to get that
for sure.
catch, trying to get that little that line that works well.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I was in terms of that project, why I was thinking about it in terms of Doki Doki, because it seems like this one is I just listened to the full record and it's all over the board, which is cool because mm-hmm. it also has a lot of people singing in it. So, of course, it would have different influences, but it also has a speed that I was not surprised by. But after having talked to you last time I talked to you and you were doing the country or slower stuff, I was like, oh, this is really upbeat. She's playing fast again.
Yeah.
How does that, did it feel? I thought originally I was saying, oh, this is faster than Dog Party, but then I went back and listened and Dog Party has some pretty quick stuff. So as a drummer, are you playing just as fast as in Dog Party or some of this seems faster? Am I wrong?
It's pretty similar.
Yeah.
And I would say in regards to, I guess, veering slightly into the country realm for Dog Party, I think it was more of me just trying to explore my just artistic whims of life. I got really into country music and wanted to explore it a little bit, but not only that, but connect it with my band with my sister because we do harmonize a lot. And I feel like sometimes in Dog Party, it gets lost a little bit. And so I wanted to slow things down a little bit to show everyone, like, listen, guys, we can sing these very beautiful harmonies. And I didn't want it to go unnoticed and just kind of blazed over.
That's cool. And Lucy, I also noticed because I'll let you know that one of the, I have this like punk rock playlist for my jogging when I jog. And
oh, nice.
Yours is consistently on there. And it's the one that I really love is the Best Friend.
It didn't even start, but we were wanting to. And then you broke my heart. Just like you planned to do. And what you did to me. Was it reckless? I thought, how could this be?
I love that song. And one of the things I like about it that I think you do well is, and I talk a lot about this in pop punk or in punk in general, where you'll have these bands that are singing exactly along to the chord changes. And I think that someone who is more experienced learns to do those things where notes carry over the changes, or you're add a little bit more flair to it, or you can sing slow over fast and bear that up again. And I think you do that really well. And Best Friend has that nice little jump in where it gets higher a little bit too, that I think is really great.
Yeah. Yeah. My sister wrote that song, and she is a brilliant writer when it comes to chord structures and just basic music theory knowledge. She's very bright. But that's one of the songs that we still play live today, and we've actually added more harmonies to it. So
yeah, it's a really great song. I think that's the Till End of Time song for me. I like that one quite a bit.
Thank you.
Well, let's get into that for the audience that doesn't know. Do you write? Do you play at any like string instrument at all to help you with constructing your like harmonies and melodies?
Yes, I play the guitar as well. Yeah, I do write on the guitar. Just the guitar, though.
Just the guitar, yeah, yeah.
Do you... No keys or anything cool like that.
Well, you got drums and guitar now. I think that's probably okay.
Yeah.
I might have asked this on the last one, but I'm always curious about drummers who sing. Have you ever felt the need to move up, like in the front, or to be just a singer or just a front person? Or?
Well, interestingly, I did feel the need to move up in the front, which is why I set up my drums in the front now.
Oh, that's new. You do that now?
I guess it's not too new. I think around 2016 is when I started doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so it's like I'm at kind of an angle, and then my sister's here. So we're just kind of like more up front, as opposed to me just being way in the back.
All right. So you're singing a little bit over your shoulder. Is that what you mean then? So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it makes me so I'm more centered towards the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I want to review some of the things we did last time. So we'll do the history up to Doki Doki, but you've been playing, if I'm not mistaken, since 2000 and was it 9? Is that's your first record, but you've been playing before that probably.
Oh yes. 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I think is maybe when we started.
And did you have a full band then, or was it always just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
Oh, that's really cool.
It's pretty interesting, but yeah, like my sister, she started playing the guitar and she started writing songs right away. And I was like, hey, that's really cool. What the hell? So my dad ended up getting me a drum set for my birthday. And then I just started playing the drums, and we were kind of learning the instrument separately. And then he had a friend that kind of like played in some bands, and my dad was telling him like, yeah, my girls are playing instruments now. Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. And he's like, oh, that's rad. Well, they're playing together, right? And my dad was like, no. So the guy ended up coming over to our house, and he just put us together in a room and was like, okay, so just try playing together. And by the end of the evening, we were playing Surfing USA by the Beach Boys. We basically just started writing a bunch of songs after that and started the band right away.
When did it move from you just rehearsing in your house to your like first show? Do you remember your first show, like in front of an mm-hmm. audience?
Yeah, it was actually with Agent Orange, which is kind of interesting.
Your first show?
Yeah. Yeah, it was at this like very, very interesting dive bar in Citrus Heights, which is a small town outside of Sacramento. And it was called the Fire Escape. And it was my first time ever in a bar. And I was in the fourth grade. And I was very confused about everything. And we went up and we literally only had four songs or five songs at that point. And the crowd liked it so much, they wanted us to play more. And so we just played like two songs over again.
Yeah.
And then there was another band that played, and then Agent Orange played. And, you know, everyone was super rowdy for Agent Orange. They got like Circle Pit and everything. And I just remember being like, amazed as a kid, like, whoa, this is crazy. And it was pretty much after that we got the attention from a local Sacramento booker named Jerry Perry, who's super rad and has a very long history in Sacramento booking bands. And he had heard of us and he was like, wow, these gals are real cool. So then he started booking us locally. And from there, we actually met Kepi Ghouli at one of Jerry Perry's birthday parties. And then we got all, you know, in Kepi's band and touring everywhere. And it's pretty much like how it started.
Right. And I think we talked about that. Your parents would come along for a lot of those because you were underage. I even went to Europe with them, right? Your parents joined you in Europe with Kepi, right?
Yeah. Our mom. Yeah. She would come with us, which props to her because we were sleeping on a lot of couches. Pretty gnarly. And she doesn't really like going places anymore. It's kind of funny. She's like, I've had my fill.
Yeah. Yes. And question. I didn't even think about this before, but I'm really, I don't know if I'm off the mark on this or whether you didn't have this experience at all, but did you feel there was a point where you had to go from a people liking to see you because it was kids playing to being considered a real band? Was that, do you remember like a time period where that happened, or is that a tangible thing for you to go through?
It was definitely like a big thing for us to go through. Very interesting because I've always been so passionate about the band and driven as a young kid that I didn't really get it when people were like, oh, like kid band, like, oh, they're so cute, yada, yada, yada. And I just remember having this like frustration, even with playing shows and not being allowed to play in certain venues because we weren't 21. And I just had like a total like resentment towards alcohol and anything like that, because that the concept of it was prohibiting me from actually doing what I liked.
Right.
And then we, you know, grew older, and then there was like this kind of awkward time when we were like teenagers, like nearing our 20s, where it was kind of like this weird growing pain of people still saying that we were like cute. Oh wow, you guys were so cute up there. And it's just like frustrating because it's like, why won't you take me seriously? But I will say, I'm 25 now, and looking back at my career and reflecting on everything, I definitely was a child in a, you know, prominently adult industry, and I was a kid band, and it is interesting to look back and reflect on it. But I mean, I still think that we are almost in that kid band mold still, even though we're not children anymore, but it's interesting to push past it. And I think that's just because we have been playing in the same band since we were kids. I think that's kind of a rare thing. There are bands, but not too many. So I think to a certain degree, you're always going to be remembered as your first, what you first were.
Right. And you've been playing so consistently, the two of you, like over years, even during pandemic, you were still doing like shows and like online things. So
yeah,
you have that stuck-to-itiveness.
Definitely. And I really do hope, I always have like a fear that people aren't going to take me seriously, but I feel like at this point I'm like, come on guys. Especially with like our new record that we're working on. I think that's like a really big feeling for me for this record, is like I'm really officially ready now to be taken seriously. The last record that we did, we put out in 2018, and a lot of the songs I had written when I was 18 years old. And so then the shift from that to now, it's like this whole like, you know, growth.
Hello, operator, you little manipulator. Listen, you're a heartbreaker. Am I gonna see you later?
How, now I'm wondering if I can answer this for myself as a writer, but are there certain stages where you've made, here's one for me. When I was writing plays, I would write more spontaneously, and whatever came out, I would like give it to my actors and they'd help me finesse it. And then eventually I had to learn to, I called it just intentionality towards writing. Like I had to start thinking more directly about what I was writing. Like, because if people were going to ask me what this means or something, I had to be prepared to do that.
Yeah.
But then I also learned that there's a balance, that like the initial ideas often are just spontaneous things that you, when you're a creative being, you can't control that sometimes. I was talking to Jesse Michaels about this last week, that it just, you can't really, you can direct that like people do in the industry, but he says that the truly original, like interesting, unique stuff that a creator can do comes from this spontaneous place they don't know. But then that sort of intentional kicks in, like now that it's out there, I need to finesse this and work it out. Do you definitely feel like you've gone through that process over the years?
Most definitely. Yeah. Like when I was a kid and I was writing these songs, so funny to look back at them. Like on our very first record, there's a song called Fire and Ice.
You act like you're bored, so you pick up a book and read all the time. Why are you acting like you're punk to me? I need some answers from you. We are fire and ice. We are cats and dogs and day and night all the time.
That's so just angry. And I was writing about kids I went to elementary school with.
Yeah.
Like little like drama on the playground, literally. And it's just hilarious. And this other song, The World Is Not a Game, I also wrote when I was in fifth grade. And I was saying some like deep things, but I wasn't really consciously like being like purposely doing it. It was just flowing out of me. And then as I got older and the band kind of gained more popularity, I hit this moment where I was like, oh shoot, people are actually like, you know, watching me and paying attention. And that definitely affected my writing, I would say. And then shifting out of that is, how do I not care what people think? And how do I let my artistic flow just happen without thinking, oh, well, if I do this, then people will think this or yada, yada, yada. So,
yeah, no, that's one of the most difficult balances. I think you deal with that your whole life, because I don't, people are often so easily pushed to saying someone's selling out or something because you appeal to a larger crowd or you intentionally appeal to a louder crowd. But as I often say, it's being an artist is a balance between in some ways pleasing your audience, but also trying to get at something that's meaningful to yourself.
Totally. Like
it's a relationship, and you have to acknowledge that. I think that's great. The thought I had too that I think is interesting, Lucy, is that a lot of people have this, diaries from their young, and they look at them and over time and they can see their transition, you know, how they've changed. You actually have that in music form. You actually can look at your whole progression.
Yes. Public. But no, it is very, unique and cool. And I feel like for a while I did have some embarrassment for our first record, just because, you know, I literally was in fifth grade when we recorded it. And it took me a while to just realize, hey, like, you shouldn't be embarrassed about it. And then when I listen to it, like nowadays, which I'll listen to it like, I don't know, maybe like once every 6 years or so. It's very seldom, but I'm like, this is actually like really cool. And I'm like, dang, I was a cool youngin.
Yeah, I remember when I was studying you for the last show that first record I really liked a lot. Do you still play songs from that live, like the earlier stuff?
Not that early. We used to play The World Is Not a Game. And Fire and Ice was in the rotation as well. We were actually going to re-record Fire and Ice on Hit and Run, which came out in 2018. We were gonna like revive the song just a little bit. But then I ended up losing my voice in the studio, and so we canned it. So we still might in the future.
The other thing that you said that reminded me of, because I think I do this a lot too, and you probably still will too, even though you were writing when you were little. But there's often a big part of writing is trying to get in touch with that something you were going through when you were younger. Like a lot of pop people actually are still writing about high school and stuff. I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But they have to get that in frame of mind of what it was like to be that young. And a lot of that stuff, if you can do it, is there is a lot of complicated and complex stuff that was going on. Like my friend Russ, who was in a band called Fudge Tunnel in Chicago a long time ago, wrote a song called Red Fire Engine. And he just talks about when he was a kid, he used to talk about how there was a red fire engine in his head. And when he was older, he realized, oh, he was talking about his dad because his dad made him really angry. And then, but he didn't understand it. So he saw it as like a red fire engine in his head.
Wow. That's cool.
So it's kind of interesting that the other thing I think I have is it about you that it's just, you could probably look back at that stuff and go, oh, wow, there was some symbolism and stuff that we deal with as kids that we don't even realize.
Totally.
Yeah. And you have that. You have that right in, right on a CD or a vinyl.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the new record. Tell me a little bit about that process. Is it a new studio or what was the ideas for this?
Yeah. So our new record, it's actually kind of like a long drawn out process. We actually had written most of the songs and even recorded demos pre-pandemic. Then the pandemic hit and it kind of shifted around our plans and whatnot. But anyways, the studio that we used to record in Sacramento, the engineer we used to use, his name was Chris Woodhouse, and he is extraordinary. And we recorded all of our stuff to tape, and it was always just a really great experience. Chris is an amazing guy, well, very talented. He ended up moving, and the studio shut down. So we were like, oh, shoot. And then in 2021, we ended up going on tour with Anti-Flag and meeting a bunch of people and kind of reconvening with a lot of people in the Asian Man Records camp and stuff. And it was after that that I started dating my current boyfriend, Randy, more. And he actually works at a district recording in San Jose. And so he was pitching it to me like, dude, you got to record your new record here. And at first I was like, you know, I'm not going to let some guy I'm dating try to tell me what to do with my craft. But I was like, okay, we'll see. We'll see. And so we ended up recording a couple of things there. Let me think. We ended up doing a song that ended up on a compilation, an Op Ivy compilation with the Moore Family Band, which is Randy's band with his siblings.
Got a room inside our mind. Yeah, we got it. We can't see out because we're blind. But it goes to show. Gotta make ourselves dream. All right, go the room without a window to a different way to see.
We did that at District. And then we also did the Doki Doki record. And that's where I familiarized myself with the studio. And I met the head engineer over there, Ryan Paris. And I just realized, dang, this studio is A, rad, and B, everyone that works here is amazing and talented, and it's definitely the right direction that I wanted to go in, phonically as well, considering the fact that Ryan is in the Atom Age, which is just a killer garage rock band. Very like vintage, you know, gearheads, love all that 60s stuff, just like I do. So I knew that the ideas I had would resonate with him, and he totally understand where I was coming from, because a lot of the songs on our new record definitely have like a 60s like girl group Spectre era flair to them. So yeah, that's pretty much with the new record. And then my sister came in and she wrote some really good, solid songs to supplement that idea. And we are like super close to being done. We are literally on final mixes right now. And so I couldn't be happier. And it's sounding amazing. And I'm just very thrilled.
Do you think you, Lucy and Gwendolyn or Gwen, do you think you drive the band equally? Are you a little bit, take a little bit more of the business and the push, or are you both? I'm curious as to that. After what you were just talking about, I wondered whether you were, you push a little bit more, and not even in a critical way, just some people do, some people don't.
I think as a band, we are very much like heavy equals, always have been, always will be. My sister is very, very good at the business aspect of the band, and she just tackles and takes care of all that stuff. She's very smart. She's a numbers gal. And then I am on the more creative side where I'm pushing all the like influences and more of that like creative drive. So I kind of like lead that charge.
That's a great, that's a great combination. Yeah.
Yeah, it works really well for us.
Here's a quote you may not have thought about. Did that relationship sort of exist? Now, wow, it's hard to probably, you've been doing it so long, it's hard to separate sister from bandmate, but did that sort of relationship exist outside, like before? Did she always seem a little bit more numbers oriented and you were a little bit more creative, fluid that way? Or
yeah, well, I will say the band started because my sister was interested in music and interested in writing songs. And I followed suit. And that was something that I really loved and enjoyed. However, she has always been very, very good at math and very interested in like solving puzzles and like numbers. And her big thing is like spreadsheets. She absolutely loves spreadsheets. And she's a very like literal person as well. So yeah, we just like work really well as a unit.
I always think this, I mean, I do a lot of listening to podcasts about science and philosophy and genetics and that. It's so interesting to see how, well, genetics ends up being like half of who we are. And the other half is like influences in our life in general. But it's so interesting to see how different people end up go from the same family, you know, from the same genes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Is it going to be, is it self-released? Or do you have a label for this?
We are definitely going to go with a label. We just don't know what our plans yet. Are at the moment. Yeah.
I think you actually had a good segue there because Randy is in Doki Doki too, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at Discogs, Randy Moore has the most other bands that he's toyed with, so
yes, very much so.
Just so the audience knows, he's in the Moore family band with a brother and sister, right?
John in the future here. Randy Moore, according to Discogs, is from the band Get Married and former lead guitarist for Stellar Corpses. He's also a member of Decent Criminal, Spirit World, Dan Adriano and the Bygones, and the Moore Family Band, plus Doki Doki. The Moore Family Band is actually a family band of Randy, Dylan, and Alyssa. Back to Lucy.
So how did this, and I thought it was interesting too that all these, Randy Moore, Donnie Walsh, Logan Hammond, have all been on Park's Music, It's Powerful Stuff interview show. So how much did he have any hand in putting this group of people together? Or was it more you all are in that circle, or how did that come about?
Oh yeah, it was 100% him. Randy and I started dating, and this was, you know, like it was 2021, so the pandemic was still very much a thing. We were over that first initial like isolation period, but Mike was very gung-ho on getting Randy and I to play music together. He was like, I want you guys to play music. I'm going to like, I want to come up with an idea. You just wait. And we're like, okay, Mike, like whatever. And then Mike came to us and said, hey, this is my idea. I want you guys to record a record. I have all these songs written and I want you guys to perform them. And I want it to be this like super group Asian man band with Donnie and Logan and Lucy and Randy. And so that's exactly what we did. We spent a week in the studio and knocked it out, and it was very fun. Hey, asshole!
You think you're cool. Play all these games, but you play like a fool.
Wow. So are they all written by Mike then?
Yeah, Mike Park wrote them.
Ah, lyrics and all, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there, it seems like he must have had the bands that the singers in mind for each, because some of them, the ones that I think you're singing, sound like you. So he must have been influenced to write similar. Did he say anything like that? Similar to your styles?
He definitely was going for this like kind of like Riot Girl-esque group. He definitely had me in mind for singing a lot of it. Additionally, Randy and I worked all the demos together. So essentially Mike would come to Randy with his acoustic guitar and just kind of like play and sing. And then Randy has to go in and make sense of it all and kind of put it together. And then I would come in and do the vocals, but we would both like shop the songs together. And that was a lot of fun, especially since we had only been dating a couple months. So it was just a very, very cute and fun to look back at. For sure.
Wow. Were you all in the studio together? Or did people come in separately? Like this, is the band functioning as a band? Like in yes. Whatever that means to you?
So Randy and I, we fleshed out the songs. We got them studio ready. And then we all just met. We didn't rehearse. And that was because I actually got COVID the week before we were supposed to do the record. No. But I ended up healing and then we went and did the record. But so, yeah, we were very much like a band in a studio, recorded it. And then after, we didn't really know what the plans were, especially because vinyl production was taking so long when we got it made, that we didn't know when it was coming out and we didn't know all this stuff. And then we ended up releasing the record. And the folks over at Punk Rock Bolin had contacted us to play the festival. And we were like, oh gosh, this is really cool. I guess we could have our debut as a band at Punk Rock Bolin. But then unfortunately, some circumstances came up and we had to drop. But there still is an off chance that we might have some kind of show where we play. I would really like that. I know that everyone would. So yeah, hopefully that will happen.
Well, you play with Dog Party played Punk Rock Bowl,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you just got off that tour a couple weeks ago, right?
Or three or four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just looked at that. Oh, that's cool. So yeah, you've done a couple videos. There's one of you all in a vehicle that I think is actually kind of fun.
Yeah, it's Mike Park's van, and we just kind of cruised around Randy's neighborhood at a really slow speed. It was pretty chaotic.
So were you aware of all these other musicians, singers in the band?
Are you
part of that family of Asian Man and all this?
Yes. So my sister and I were on Asian Man for a good handful of years. We have three releases on there. And then we had actually just gotten off a big tour with Anti-Flag, us, and Grumpster.
Can't you see there's something off with me? My head is fucked, my feet are stuck, and I can barely breathe. Can't you see there's something off with me? My head is fucked, my feet are stuck, and I can barely breathe.
Which Donnie's in Grumpster. So then that's how we were kind of palling around with Donnie. And then I hadn't really met Logan that many times. We had played a show together at Gilman ages ago, right when Small Crush had started. But it was very, very fun getting to hang out with Logan and kind of form a stronger friendship.
John, in the future, to clarify who we are talking about, we are talking about Logan Hammond from the band Small Crush. Here is a song called Home.
Are you what I'm looking for? If I had the chance to say it.
And that was the whole point. Mike wanted to get some solid musicians in the studio that were around the same age group together and playing and having fun. Yeah, it was a bunch of fun.
Yeah, I didn't. This is fun for me to explore a lot of these bands because I didn't know a lot of them or any of them actually at all. But Donnie is very sprightly, energetic person. It seems fun to play with. Like, I watched a couple of those Grumpster videos. And...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Donnie's a ball of energy for sure. It was very cool going on tour with him.
So right now you don't know if there's any other plans for that. It's people have the heart to want to keep working together, and everyone has their other bands that they're currently functioning in. Correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. What's Lucy? You always seem to have your hands in other artistic stuff too. What else is going on with you?
Yeah. So let's see. Well, in 2022. I started DJing. So I collect vinyl, specifically 45s, which is a little crazy. But yeah, I spin specifically 50s and 60s country music. And so that's a lot of fun. And through spinning vinyl, I ended up getting hooked up with this DJ company that puts on these like big shows. And they had one that was focusing in on women in country music, and I said, hell yeah, I want to do that, because I would love to support women in any genre possible, and country music happens to be a genre that I really like, so I do that. It's a lot of fun. I actually have a show in Seattle tomorrow, so I'm flying to Seattle tomorrow to do that.
Wow. So do you actually go there with all your crates of records, or you transfer them to digital, or how do you?
Yeah. Yeah. So for my big shows I do with this company, it's all digital. And so then that's entirely different too. So
yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing is just, it's been crazy to adjust to. Like the first shows that I did were like completely sold out. I DJed at the Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo, and there were like just shy of 1,000 people there. And I was like, I don't know how to do this. Like, I hadn't been DJing digitally very long at all. I was like purely analog, and I get over and have to learn this new thing. And the hardest thing for me was shifting into trying to MC and also dancing. I've never been a dancer, never done anything like that. And they, you know, they need me to
keep want people. You to be in the groove, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I was like the most nervous I'd probably ever been in my whole entire life before these shows. And I still do. I get the worst stage fright ever. And then the second I go on stage, I'm like,
yeah.
It's like the new person is born. But it's crazy. Like, I kind of almost relate it to, this is not at all accurate in any way, but this is how I feel when I'm like dancing on stage. It almost feels like I'm kind of composing, because I am a drummer and I am so in tune with the beat. I can like do these little like moves
in
time with the beat. So I do that, and it's very, very fun. And I'm very grateful that I get to be in the field of creativity and like music for my main occupation. So,
wow. Yeah, I have a sidetrack for that. I'm not going to let you get away because there's a couple more DJ things that I think I have to ask. But one thing I'll say about myself is that a lot of people don't know that while I was on tour with Weasel or doing theater, I also was an avid dancer. I would go like the clubs like 5 nights a week, but I didn't socialize. I didn't go to meat markets. I went to these like 80s clubs, things that were people that really just went just to dance.
Yeah.
Really great. But I started doing like what you were saying. Like, I got so into, and probably being a musician myself, I got so into the structures of the songs that I would move like different hand parts and arm parts to the parts. And sometimes when I really let myself go, it did feel like I was constructing the music as I was moving.
Yeah, it's quite fun. I don't know what it is, but I know it sounds like so ridiculous, but ever since I have started dancing, because mind you, like I said previously, never danced before, but ever since I started dancing, it has almost like opened up this little thing in my brain where it's I don't know. It's really hard to explain. It's almost like I view the world a little differently, like slightly more
Yeah.
joyful.
No, you're talking to someone that can understand that, but I've never really vocalized how to. I had a group of friends that were like, we would, I don't know, I used to have a name for it, but we were like friends, but not really. Like we all knew each other from the club, and we had different names for each other because we didn't really know each other. Like one was called the box stacker because he would dance like he was stacking boxes. I had my gothic friends that were just in gothic, and they would do the gothic
Oh,
dances.
that's cool.
But it was a community, and it was people who were really serious about it. And it did add a
Yeah.
whole, and like I said, it wasn't like going to, because most people, when you say I'm going to a club, they think, oh, you're gonna drink. And I didn't drink it. I wouldn't drink anything the whole night. Like I would be there 6 or 7 hours and just dance the night away.
That's
And there,
cool.
yeah, there were these group of people in Chicago. That's what they did. They did. It was, and it was really actually hard to talk about because it does. It's like a freedom and creativity that is, yeah, it doesn't have words. You're trying
Yeah.
to express yourself to something that doesn't, you know,
Totally. And I
have.
just think it's so interesting because you have to look at it from this perspective as well. When I'm on stage playing in my band, I'm drumming. I haven't been in a band where I don't drum. I guess that's true. Yeah. And if ever I'm not drumming, it's for like a song where I'm like singing up front.
Yeah.
But I have like zero experience being like a front person per se. So the fact that I like literally went on stage with my DJ stuff and just started playing music that the music that I play for this show I do in particular, it's kind of a nostalgia show that's centered around the 90s, goes back further and it goes to current music as well, but it's like very much like Shania Twain vibes at the show that
Okay.
I do with this company.
Any man of mine better walk the line. Better show me a teasing, squeezing, pleasing kind of time.
I didn't grow up listening to this music at all. and so I just went on stage and I was in front of, hundreds of people and I just started dancing.
Wow.
And I'm like, this is my job. I have to, hype people up and keep this party going. And it's very cool. And I take it very seriously.
Yeah, no, I could
And
tell.
I'm having tons of fun. And I never would have imagined myself doing that. So, yeah. And I just laughed because when my sister and I were kids, we had family over for dinner. We would always find a way to go into the garage and start digging around in our like dress up bins and put on like these crazy dresses or like costumes we had and like put on like some kind of weird play that we were making up like on the spot. And so we'd dance and sing and do stuff like that. And I almost kind of relate it to that because it's kind of how it feels like I'm just kind of going up there and feeling it
Wow.
out.
When I was younger, my father had another family. He my divorced my mom, and his stepkids were about my age, a little bit younger. But I used to go over there when I was like 8 or 9. And since I was a little bit older, I was supposed to be kind of in charge of them, you know, like a babysitter. But I would put on these records, these John Denver records, and construct little musical dance plays that the three of us would do.
That's cool.
And I still, to this day, I still listen to John Denver with like, oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
The last question on the DJing I'm asking, I'm just curious because I was a DJ too for a long time.
Oh, right on.
And I did it with, you know, I would do like high school dances and stuff like and weddings.
Oh,
And
wow.
for me, my partner is very vinyl. You know, this was actually before they had the digital stuff. So, but it was, I loved that action of putting on the vinyl and the, you know, moving it
Yes.
over and going through and deciding what's next. Do you have a preference for your different the digital and that, or do you like both
Oh
equally, or
yeah.
what do you get out of one that you don't get out of the other
No.
one?
Yeah, I love DJing analog. Like that's how I started. I also, spend hours at the record store digging through all the 45s, trying to find records to play and, finding records that you have absolutely been like dying to find, and the joy of it all, and then
yeah,
cleaning them, and then taking all your little 45 boxes over to the show. And I have them all organized. I have I organize them like my bangers are in one box, and then I have my mids, which are pretty much bangers as well, but they're just slightly slower, not as exciting. And then I have my rockabilly tunes / instrumentals, and then I have my slow songs. And then I'm kind of like a mad scientist back there. Like, it's the most fun ever, like listening to songs and picking out intricate details, or like, oh, that guitar tone reminds me of a guitar tone on this song, or like, oh, the shuffle in this song will go really well with this song. Yeah. There's just so many things that are so cool, and I always do all of my vinyl DJ sets on the fly. Nothing's ever curated or anything like that. So I do have a love for that. And then when I got hired to do these other shows, it was definitely an adjustment. And at first I was like, ugh, it's hard to do on a laptop. I have to use a little trackpad, and I have to drag the song into the, it's like a picture of what a record player is, but I have to drag it to the A channel and drag it to the B channel. And my very first show doing digital, I made two like big mistakes. They weren't too terrible, but one was in the first three songs where I played a song over again. And then right at the very end, I played another song over again. And it was just like, I would never do that if it was vinyl, because you play the song, you put it back,
you put
in
it in a pile.
You put it over there. Yeah. You're not playing it again. And so I was like, oh God. So then I kept having to write down these little notes when I first started DJing, like all these little things like, pay attention to this, and like, be mindful when you're dragging songs in. I haven't had like too much of a detrimental like problem happen while DJing for these big shows. But the crowd really does notice, and it's surprising. Like, I was DJing in Denver, and it was a great show. Full room, great energy, and my hand accidentally hit the play pause button on my DJ console for like a split second. So I stopped the song, and then I was like, oh my God. And the crowd literally went, when the song stopped for a second, I was like, oh God.
I've done that before with me and Matt, who's a DJ. And
a little explanation here from Future John. I dropped the name Matt as if everyone knows who he is. Matt Nelson is who I was talking about. We went to high school together and started a company called Out of Control. And later on, after I formed Screeching Weasel with Ben Foster, Matt Nelson took over booking at Dirty Nelly's and then McGregor's, and booked such bands as, you know, Operation Ivy and Crimshine and Green Day in the early days. And he used the name Out of Control, which was the name of our DJ company.
We had two players, of course, and occasionally one of us would like pick up the needle thinking it was the other one, and it was the song playing, and the whole audience would just like almost like freeze mid dance and just like, what?
And luckily, I don't want to like jinx myself, I'll knock on any wood I can find, but I have never, while DJing digitally, have dragged a song into the live queue to change it instantly.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's my biggest nightmare. Oh God. But yeah.
Well, you and I'll have to do another podcast talking about DJing, because I have great memories. One last thing I'll say about us is I think we were in like the mid 80s. So it was a little bit prior to the revolution of like people going to see DJs. That like didn't really exist then. So we would be stuck doing like high school dances and weddings, which we loved. But we quickly began to realize that at weddings, they would give you like the song list that they wanted. And we would not have any fun, and the audience would not have fun. So we started putting in our contracts that you can give us songs to play, but we were in charge of the sound, because DJs really do know how to make a night move along, you know, and then. And people that are having their wedding, they have so much to think about. They don't even realize that. So like, oh, I'll just give them the playlist. It'll be easy. And then we're like, no.
Totally.
There's a time when you want your audience dancing slow, and there's a time when you want them like jumping up and down. And
exactly. That was kind of a tricky thing when I did start DJing for this company because I had to do a bunch of research about country music that I didn't really know anything about. And just like figuring out like what songs are popular. I spent a lot of time looking at Billboard charts, but even that was difficult because there weren't like very many women in country music that were very successful on the charts. So obviously like you have like your big name gals, but few and far between. It's like the male dominated country music industry. But so that it's all been such a wonderful learning experience. And I feel like anything I do in the field of music is a great learning experience to only push my creativity and just knowledge of music in general, which I'm like super into. So yeah, I think it's all very interesting.
It's a life project for you.
For sure. Okay.
So let's end it by you. I think there's one more thing you were going to go on to past the DJ. There is other stuff you do too. So hit that and then we'll call it a day.
So I went to a school for art in college. And so I am an artist and, so when I actually graduated college during the pandemic, it was my last semester of senior year of college was when the pandemic hit. So I was almost done with my degree and I just had to spend the last couple months online finishing it up. Once I graduated in May, we were still pretty much in like active lockdown. No one was doing anything. No one was doing shows. No one was really even doing a lot of live stream. Oh, well, live streams kind of started cropping up by that point, but essentially Dog Party wasn't doing anything. And I was just fresh out of school. So I just started making a bunch of art and releasing stuff on my online shop, which I conveniently have connected to the band's website. So it's all in one place.
Nice.
And yeah, I started out by doing like Western inspired art, like cowboys and stuff and like desert stuff. And then I actually did a project in my illustration class, which was supposed to be like an alphabet book. And I chose to do country music stars from like A to Z. So I have a bunch of portraits of country musicians. So I released my favorite ones onto my website as prints. And people really liked my portrait style that I was doing. And so that really was cool. And I ended up doing the Ramones as well. So I kind of like ventured out of doing country artist portraits and I did the Ramones. And I do freelance work for various different bands. I've done Wiccan Babysitter, which is Ben from AJJ, his band. And then I recently did some single covers for Sweet Gloom, which is a band off of Asian Man Records. I have a lot of fun with it.
Is that a mixed media for you? Do you have a, is it painting or is it digital or what is your choice?
My favorite type of painting is gouache, which is, I don't know if you know what it is, but it's like very similar to watercolor, except it's more opaque. It's what basically illustrators used in the golden age of illustration. And I love gouache a lot. But I also work on an iPad tablet. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the work I do these days is digital.
Yeah, I couldn't make that. I also do art too, but I couldn't make that transition. I've always been like a dirty artist. I'm a lefty, so I'm always messy.
Yeah.
It's become part of my art is it's like messy and you could probably build that into the pad if you wanted to like.
You can add all this like grit, but it is a very interesting, pretty much like everything I've explained in this whole podcast, I really like analog ways of doing stuff. So when it comes to art, I like doing it on paper and paint. I did have to get an iPad for a class I was taking, and I just remember being very, not necessarily that I was against it, but I definitely had my opinions on it. I think because I grew up in the age that I grew up, and a lot of my peers at school were very heavily invested in digital art. And one of the opinions that I had about digital art was that you can really go overboard with it because you have, if you're in like a paint program, you have a color wheel and you can instantly get any color you want and you can have like a million colors on your canvas and whatever. But if you're painting, you have to sit and mix colors and you have to be more mindful about color combinations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then when I actually did get an iPad, I was like, wow, if you go into this art with the mindset of using the digital device as a tool rather than a crutch, then it can really help you develop your personal artistic style like pretty quickly because of the back button, which if you were manually painting
Oh, right.
and you
You
were
couldn't,
trying to develop an original style,
you
it
had
would.
to incorporate that mistake or.
Yeah. Looking back, I'm very glad that I did incorporate digital media, this medium, when I did, because I had all of my art education was just my hands and the paper. And then right at the very end, I was like, all right, let's add this iPad in. And it's really quite cool.
Well, in the world, in almost any field of artistic now, there's a lot of podcasts about this. Once again, philosophy and science, and also art podcasts of dealing with this GPT, and even writers like is having GPT write your story still a creative pursuit? It's a big discussion right now about
Yeah,
how
for
much we
sure.
use these internet or the digital to and still be our creations. The other thing I was going to say is that Paul Russell, one of my best friends who did the original Screeching Weasel logo,
Oh, right on.
he what he used to do way back then when we were all like hanging out at Kinko's, when there was no like home computers, we were just hanging out at Kinko's. He started doing stuff where he would take his art, like textures and patterns and drawings, and then he would copy them in infinitum, and then so he was using that sort of format of using something other than the self to create that. And then he got a job at one other company, but then he got hired by Xbox and created the first Halo game. So at that
Oh,
point he was only creating on like iPads and computers at that point. So now he's still a combination of the two. He really likes that he'll do these sketches of people for their birthdays, and then he'll put it through the computer and then digitalize it and do stuff to it. And he's good at making it go back and forth. Like he'll print it out and then start drawing on it
yeah,
again.
that's super cool.
Lucy, I think that was it.
Right on.
You for talking to me about the DJing. I didn't know about that stuff. That's great.
Yeah.
And you can tell you're very passionate about it, so it's cool.
I love it a lot.
All right. Thank you, Lucy.
Yeah, thank you again.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. All
It's
right.
very nice talking to you.
Bye.
Bye.
If you have made it this far, you just got done listening to I Was Killing It Man by Doki Doki off their record Doki Doki, released this year, if this year is now, in 2023. Thanks, everybody. I had a great time catching up with Lucy, and I hope you enjoyed that too. In case you are interested, I have it at the www.jugheadsbasementpodcastsite.com. www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com site. That's a better way to say it. There is a link to the episode that Dog Party participated on. My horror podcast show is called The Horror of the Polycephaly Aporia, and they are on episode 5. I highly suggest listening to it. I hope that me and my friend Jason will wrap up this series in a few months. It was really fun to do, and it took a lot of work to actually do this sort of old-timey radio broadcast. A strange kind of concept where it's a two-headed man is stuck in a house they can't get out of, and there's a bunch of strange characters in there. Kyle Kinane has been on it. Grim Deeds. Miguel from Teenage Bottle Rocket, Daryl from Bowl Weevils, and of course, Dog Party. So take a look at that. You could just search for Polycephaly Aporia at the website, or you can follow the link that I put in the episode for Lucy. That's it. Upcoming, it's pretty exciting. I have Chris Wallard from Hot Water Music to talk about the Benefits album that he participated in, covering Naked Ray Gun songs to help the family of Pierre Kesdi. And then following that, I have Simon Lamb, who is in Dan Vapid and the Cheats, Screeching Weasel, and he is actually a longtime friend of mine way back when I met him in Scotland. I think that should be a very exciting, fun podcast to listen to. So, all that coming up. Thank you very much. Patreon, all that shit and whatnots. Okay, live a life and do it now.